but so far they had come up empty.
"Whatever it takes," said Courtney. "We'll be there for you."
Bobby smiled. Mark, on the other hand, was dying with curiosity. He didn't want Bobby to nod off before finding out what happened on Denderon.
"So tell us what happened."
Courtney gave Mark a punch in the arm.
"Ow!"
yelped Mark, and grabbed his stinging arm.
"Go to sleep, Bobby," said Courtney. "Tell us later."
Bobby didn't open his eyes, but he chuckled at his friend's curiosity.
"Oh, yeah, I almost forgot,"
he said, while reaching up to his shirt. He unbuttoned a few buttons, reached his hand in, and pulled out a roll of parchment paper.
"It's all there,"
he said, fading fast.
"Everything that happened since I wrote last. Wake me up when you're finished."
That was the last thing he said. Bobby was in dreamland, the roll of parchment paper still in his hand. Mark glanced to Courtney, hesitated a moment, then took the precious journal. Courtney took the folded-up comforter from the bottom of Mark's bed and laid it gently over Bobby, right up to his chin. This was probably the first time he had slept in a bed in a long time, and she wanted to make sure he was as safe and comfortable as possible. Then the two of them walked quietly to the far side of the room.
"Should we go downstairs and leave him alone?"
whispered Mark.
"No,"
was Courtney's reply.
"Nothing we could do would wake him up now."
Mark nodded. He didn't want to leave either. He slipped the familiar leather twine off the rolled-up scroll and opened it, enough to read the very first line.
"Journal number 4?"
asked Courtney.
"Journal number 4,"
answered Mark. The two sat down next to each other on the floor and began to read the final chapter in Bobby's adventure.
Journal number 4. Denderon.
"I can't believe I'm still alive. At least I think I'm still alive. Every muscle, every bone, every hair follicle I've got is sore as hell, which pretty much tells me I'm still among the living. As I write this final journal to you guys, I've still got one major task ahead of me before I can come home. But right now I don't even feel like moving. Even the effort of pushing this pen across the paper is painful. I'm going to try and rest up, write this journal, and then get myself psyched for the final push. As hurting as my body is, it's just as painful to remember the events of the past few days. But I've got to do it and write it all down, because once it's on the page, I'm going to do my level best to forget it all. I should warn you that some of the things I'm going to write about I didn't see for myself. It has been an incredible few days, and there was no way I could be everywhere at once to see it all, but I'll do my best to recreate those events in my journal as accurately as possible, based on what others have told me. I don't have a problem doing this, because I'm sure everything they described is true. So sit down, take a breath, and hold on. It's going to be a wild ride." I finished my last journal right after we rescued Uncle Press, then got recaptured by the people whom we thought were our friends, the Malago. Their leader, Relan, showed us the huge bomb of tack they planned on using to vaporize the Bedouin. There is something you should understand here. The Malago are not our enemies, but they were afraid we would try to stop them from using that nasty weapon. And they were right. If they exploded that bad boy, the destruction would be horrible. If we could stop them, we would. So we were in the weird position of being friendly enemies. They brought us back to the hospital hut I'd been to a few times and locked us up with guards at the door. They said that as soon as the battle was over, they'd let us go. Great. If they detonated that bomb, there wouldn't be any place left for us to go. So the four of us, me, Uncle Press, Lore, and Alder, were prisoners again. As soon as we entered the hut, Uncle Press looked around quickly.
"Osa isn't here,"
he said.
"She must be in hiding."
Uh-oh. We hadn't gotten the chance to tell Uncle Press what had happened to her. I also realized that Osa's body wasn't there any longer.
What happened?
He asked quickly. Lore pointed to me and said, She was killed while protecting him from the Bedouin knights. Perfect. As if I didn't have enough guilt going on at the moment, she had to remind me about my part in Osa's death. I guess I couldn't be angry with her. Osa was her mother. She deserved to be angry, but I wish she didn't have to lay all of the blame on me. Malos and the Bedouin knights had a little something to do with it, too. We all looked to Uncle Press for his reaction. It was a strange one. Rather than show any sign of grief, he simply nodded, as if the news of Osa's death were nothing more than a simple fact to file away. I think he realized that the three of us were taking it harder than that, because he put his hand on Lore's shoulder and said,
Don't be sad. This is the way it was meant to be.
That was exactly what Osa said just before she died. Was that some sort of traveler motto? If so, it was a lousy one. It didn't make me feel any better, and I doubted if it helped Lore at all.
Everyone get some rest, Uncle Press ordered. Tomorrow's going to be a tough day.
He was right. We all needed rest. So we took places apart from one another in different corners of the hut. This is when I wrote the last journal that I sent you. Lore wrote too, as did Alder. We were all documenting our experiences as travelers, though I'm pretty sure we all had different opinions about how things were going. The only one who didn't write was Uncle Press. He laid down on one of the benches and closed his eyes. I wondered how much sleep he had gotten while a prisoner in the Bedouin palace. Not much, probably. As I wrote, I sensed that there was tension in the room. Maybe it was just my own paranoia, but I had the feeling that the others were blaming me for the tough position we were in. Whenever I looked up, both Alder and Lore would quickly look away. The truth was, I didn't blame them. As I played out the events of the past few days in my mind, the sickening realization came to me that the situation on Denderon was much worse because of me. If Uncle Press hadn't brought me here, then he probably wouldn't have been captured by the Bedouin. And if he hadn't been captured, then he wouldn't have needed to be rescued. And I wouldn't have written to you guys to send me the stuff from home. And if I hadn't gotten that stuff from home, then the Malaga wouldn't have the ability to explode that huge bomb. And if I weren't here, Osa would still be alive because... If. Whenever you look back and say, if, you know you're in trouble. There's no such thing as if. The only thing that counts is what really happened. And the truth was that every chance I got, I screwed up. Even when I thought I had done something good, it always turned out bad. Then, just to rub salt in everyone's wounds, my watch alarm started to beep. I had totally forgotten about my Casio. Alder and Lore shot a look at me. They had no idea what it was. Uncle Press just cracked an eye open and gave me a deadly look. Without saying a word, I jumped up and ran to a corner of the hut where I pulled the watch off and threw it into the latrine. I think it was a safe bet that nobody would go down there after it. I even pulled my Swiss Army knife out of my pocket and dumped it in the ooze. I looked back at the others to see they were all staring at me. I couldn't take it anymore. What? I yelled. So I messed up. Yeah, I got that stuff from home, but it was the only way I could think of to get Uncle Press out, and it worked, didn't it? Nobody said a word. They just stared back at me. It was making me crazy. It's not like you tried to stop me, Lore, Alder, I added. You used the stuff, too. But we did not know it was wrong, said Lore quietly. You did. I couldn't argue with that. But I was still in an arguing mood, so I yelled, I didn't ask to come here, you know. It's not like I had a choice. I'm not a warrior like Lore or Osa. I'm not a knight like Alder. And I'm not a... I don't know what you are anymore, Uncle Press, but I'm sure as hell not like you. You never should have brought me here. I was ready for a fight. I wanted them to say what a loser I was, because I had a great comeback. I'd agree with them. I never claimed to be anything more than a junior high kid from the suburbs. That's it. I wasn't a revolutionary or a fighter or anything else they wanted me to be. It wasn't fair to blame me for not living up to their expectations. I was doing the best I could. If that wasn't good enough, well, too bad. But that's not what happened. Instead, Uncle Press sat up on the bench and softly said,
Come here, all of you. Sit down.
We all kind of awkwardly exchanged glances and walked over to him.
I had no idea where this was going. Uncle Press then spoke to us in such a calm manner that it took all of the tension out of the room. It kind of reminded me of the way Osa always seemed to have the ability to chill everybody out.
"I understand how tough this is for all of you,"
he began.
"You haven't known about being travelers for very long, and it's got to be confusing." "I do not understand why this has happened to me,"
said Alder.
"Why must we be travelers?"
"I was not given a choice," added Lore. "It does not seem fair."
I then realized that I wasn't the only one who was freaking out. Lore and Alder hadn't known about being travelers for very long either. The only difference was they were better equipped to handle the assignment than I was. The closest I ever came to that kind of training was in Saturday morning karate class when I was 10. I usually ended up getting a bloody nose and running home crying. That's not exactly elite warrior training. I was definitely out of my league here.
Uncle Press smiled warmly and said,
"If you want to know why you are travelers, all you have to do is look back on what you've already done. The way the three of you rescued me from that palace was an amazing thing. You proved yourselves to be smart and brave and resourceful. But more important was the fact that you willingly put your lives at risk because it was the right thing to do. Ordinary people wouldn't do that. You want to know why you're travelers? Look first to yourselves."
"But what are these powers?" asked Lore. "We understand words that we should not."
"There's a lot for you to learn," said Uncle Press. "But the best way for that to happen is for you to experience it. As time goes on, everything will come clear. But you need to learn it on your own."
"Come on," I said impatiently. "You gotta give us more than that. Are there others? I mean, are there more travelers?"
"Yes," said Uncle Press. "Every territory has a traveler. When you arrive in a new territory, always find the traveler. They know best about the customs and history of their home territory and can help you along."
"Like Alder," said Lore.
"Yes, like Alder," confirmed Uncle Press.
"And what about Malos, St. Dane?" I asked. "He's a traveler too, right?"
Uncle Press's expression grew hard.
"Yes,"
he said coldly.
"This is something you should know about now,"
he said.
"Every territory is in conflict. There are always wars and disputes and battles. That's the nature of things. Always was, always will be. But no matter what the conflict of a territory is, the true enemy is St. Dane. Here on Denderon is not the Bedouin, or Queen Kagan, or even the Quigs. The real threat is St. Dane. He's the one who must be stopped."
"What's his deal?" I asked. "Why is he so dangerous?"
I could tell we were getting into hairy territory because Uncle Press had his game face back on.
"He's dangerous because you never see him coming," was Uncle Press's answer. "He changes himself. On Denderon he has become Malos, advisor to the Queen. Bobby, you saw him back on Second Earth. He took on the form of a policeman. I'm not sure if he physically changes or if he uses some kind of mind control to make you think he looks different. But the bottom line is, you don't always see him coming, and make no mistake about it, the guy is evil."
Uncle Press paced faster. We all listened closely because it was clear we needed to hear what he was now telling us.
"But his evil isn't obvious," he continued. "He doesn't murder or cause floods or fires. His methods are much more devious. He will go to a territory and move himself into a position where he can influence events. He's smart and convincing. He'll appear to be your friend while the whole time he's pushing you toward disaster."
"Like with the Bedouin?"
I asked.
"Exactly,"
shot back Uncle Press.
"The Malago and the Bedouin have been in conflict for centuries, but St. Dane has pushed it to the edge. Before he got here, things were rough for the Malago, but nowhere near as bad as they are now. He worked his way into the trust of Queen Kagan."
"Who isn't exactly a rocket scientist," I added.
"No, she isn't,"
he agreed.
"For a while it was looking as if the Bedouin might cut the Malago some slack, but it was St. Dane's influence that convinced the Bedouin to push harder. He's the one who started the unreasonable demands for Glaze,
and the transfer ceremony, and the horrible Quig slaughters in the stadium. It looks to the Milago as if the Bedouin wanted all this, but it was really St. Dane, or Malos, as he calls himself here. He whispers suggestions to Kagan, and she makes them law.
"But why does he do this?" asked Alder.
"To push the territory toward chaos,"
was Uncle Press's firm answer.
"St. Dane doesn't care about the Bedouin or the Milago. He's using the Bedouin to push the Milago into getting so desperate that they will fight back. He wants a war, but not just any war. He wants the Milago to use Tak. I see that now."
"He wants them to blow everybody up?" I asked.
"Not exactly,"
he continued.
"Yes, using that bomb will cause terrible damage, but the long-term effects are what St. Dane is after. I should have seen it coming, but I didn't. I didn't know about Tak."
"Could St. Dane have brought it from another territory?" I asked.
"I doubt it. My guess is that it's natural to Denderon, and somehow Figgis stumbled across it, and St. Dane is taking advantage. Tak now represents power to the Milago. They've been held down for so long that they'll grab at anything to pull themselves up. But once they start using Tak on the Bedouin, where will it stop? They could create weapons that would make them the most powerful tribe on Denderon. There are thousands of tribes here. None of them have a weapon like this. Putting the power of Tak into the hands of one tribe is like tipping the balance. The Milago may be a peaceful bunch now, but they've got years of pent-up anger. With that kind of power in their hands, and they could overrun Denderon. That's the kind of chaos St. Dane is looking for."
There it was. Lore had told me about the mission of the Travelers, but Uncle Press had now spelled it out pretty clearly. If this war began and the Milago used Tak, it would be disaster. It really was a bigger deal than just a battle between two warring tribes. But there was something else that was bugging me. "What is Hala?" I asked Uncle Press. Uncle Press shot me a surprised look.
"Where did you hear that name?"
"From St. Dane," I said. "Before he took us to the stadium, he told me that Hala would fall, and we would fall with it. What is Hala?"
"Hala is everything,"
he answered.
"Every territory, every person, every living thing, every time there ever was. Hala is what separates order from chaos. If Hala crumbles, there will be nothing left but darkness. Everywhere. For everyone."
Whoa. Now there was a concept to try and get my mind around. None of us spoke for a long while. We had just shifted into a new gear here. Was it possible? Could it be that the battle between the Milago and the Bedouin was not only about the future of Denderon, but about the future of all territories? If things turned sour here, could that somehow affect things back home? This was the most devastating thing I had heard so far. The stakes had become so huge that it was hard to comprehend. Before any of us had the chance to ask another question, the wooden door to the hut flew open, and a Milago miner stormed in.
"Rella wishes to see you," he announced.
Uncle Press stood, but the miner held his hand up to stop him.
"Not you," he said. "Pendragon."
"Relan wants to see me? What for?"
"Go with him, Bobby," said Uncle Press. "Listen to what he has to say. You know how important it is."
Yeah, this was important, all right. It was so important that I wished somebody else was going. But I got up to follow the miner out of the hut. Before I left, I looked at Uncle Press. "I messed up," I said. "I'm sorry." Uncle Press smiled and said,
"It's okay, Bobby. Mistakes will be made."
That actually made me feel better. We were still in deep trouble, and it was still my fault, but at least I didn't feel like a total Nimrod for what I had done. One thing I could say for sure, though, I wouldn't do it again. I guess that's what Uncle Press meant by telling us we would have to learn about being travelers by experiencing it ourselves. You don't truly learn something until it's real. And the bomb that was about to blow us all into dust was very real. It's a tough way to learn a lesson. I followed the miner out of the hut. Night had fallen, though I had no idea what time it was. My watch was floating in the latrine, remember? The village was empty. I could see lights coming from the huts, but nobody was walking about. It felt like the calm before the storm. The miner walked quickly until we came to one of the larger huts. He motioned for me to enter. It wasn't like I had a whole lot of choices, so I went in. Relan was waiting for me. He sat near the fire and offered me a cup of some kind of liquid. I wasn't sure if I should take it or not. Maybe it was poison. Or maybe it was a peace offering, and by not taking it, I'd be insulting him. I decided to take the cup and only pretend to drink. Of course, if it was poison and I didn't clutch my throat in agony, he'd pretty much know I faked taking a drink. Maybe I was overthinking this. Once I had taken the cup and faked the drink, with no reaction from Relan, he stood up and walked to a wooden table. Lying there was the battery from my flashlight, but something was attached to it. I looked closer, and my stomach twisted when I saw that it was a small piece of tack. The wires and the switch had been pulled out of the flashlight and were used to connect the tack to the battery. These guys learned fast. They had made a little bomb. If they flipped the switch from the battery, it would complete the circuit and send a jolt of electricity through the tack. It may be a small jolt, but probably enough to detonate the unstable explosive. Relan picked it up and examined it. I wanted to shout for him to be careful, but I could see that he appreciated the power and was handling it with caution.
"We have been trying to find a way to control tack," he said. "But until now, we have been unsuccessful."
My mind flashed back to the moment down in the mines when there was an explosion and Relan had to be rescued. He was probably experimenting with tack and something had gone wrong. Slowly the pieces of the puzzle were coming together.
"This is how we will ignite the tack,"
he continued.
"Tomorrow this small device will explode, and that will set off the larger load. When my army hears the explosion, it will be their signal to attack. They will then overrun what is left of the Bedouin. It will all be so very simple because of you."
"Gee, thanks. I'm thrilled that I could help us all move closer to Armageddon." Relan put the small bomb down and sat back by the fire. He motioned for me to sit across from him.
"You have seen our lives," he said sadly. "We are dying. The Bedouin will never allow us to be free. Tack is our salvation. With Tack, the Malago can pull themselves up from the dirt and become the proud people we were destined to be."
He was absolutely right. The Malago had it bad. They lived like tortured animals. Nobody deserved that. They had every right to fight back, but they didn't understand that they were going about it the wrong way.
"You and your people want to help us,"
he continued.
"For that we are grateful. But there is one thing we need from you that will be more helpful than you can imagine."
"What's that?" I asked warily. Relan stood up and walked quickly back to his little homemade bomb. He picked it up and held it out as if it were the Holy Grail.
"Bring us more of these devices," he said with passion. "If we had more, we could become the most powerful army on Denderon. Once the Bedouin are defeated, the Malago would never have to live in fear again. We could turn our miserable lives around to become the leaders of Denderon."
Oh, man. Uncle Press was absolutely right. Now that the Malago had a little taste of power, they weren't going to be satisfied with just beating up on the Bedouin. They hadn't even won yet, and they already had visions of taking over the rest of Denderon. The good guys were going to become the bad guys, and the result would be chaos.
"Will you help us, Pendragon?"
asked Relan sincerely. This was my chance. Maybe my only chance to try and talk Relan out of his plan. I couldn't argue against centuries of hatred, so the best thing I could do was try and make him see the downside to his plan. I had to choose my words carefully. "I'm not an expert on these things," I said. "But if you blow up that big load of tack, there may not be much left of the Bedouin to conquer. Heck, there may not be much left of the Malago either. Where I come from, there are many weapons like this. But the biggest fear we have is that they will be used. You don't understand what you're doing, Relan. Your lives may be horrible now, but you may be worse off after the explosion. There must be a better way.
No,
he shouted angrily. I hadn't chosen my words carefully enough.
You do not understand,
he yelled at me.
You have not lived your life in fear, in pain, in hunger. This is the only way. This is how the Malaga will defeat the Bedouin. Now will you help us?
Key moment. I'll help you, I answered as firmly as I could. We'll all help you, but not if it means using tack. Relan stiffened and said,
Then go back to your friends. You will not be harmed. When the battle is over, you will be free to leave.
My mind was racing. I wanted to come up with something to change his mind, but I was drawing a blank. The truth was, I didn't know how the Malaga could possibly defeat the Bedouin without the help of something like tack. I couldn't offer a better solution. I had one chance, and I blew it. But then a thought hit me. How will you explode the bomb? I asked. If someone pushes that switch, then they'll go up with it. Relan straightened up proudly.
It will be an honor to die in the name of freedom for the Malaga.
Oh, man. Relan was going on a suicide mission. This wasn't about personal glory or power. This was a good man who cared about the future of his people more than he cared about his own life. There was nothing more for me to say, so I left the hut, feeling sorry for him, but also feeling incredible respect and fear. If someone was ready to die for his cause, a dweeb like me had no chance of talking him out of it. That bomb was going to explode tomorrow, and there wasn't anything I could do about it. The miner led me back to the hospital hut, where I quickly told the others about my meeting.
So then it is true, said Lore. The Malaga will become a powerful warring tribe and destroy all of Denderon.
That's if they don't blow themselves up with that humongous bomb first, I added. There was still a big question to be answered. Where were the Malaga going to explode the bomb? They couldn't very well do it around here, or their own village would be vaporized. They may have been primitive, but I'm sure they figured that little detail out. No, they must be planning on exploding it near the Bedouin palace. But how could they pull that off? It's not like they could drop it off on the palace doorstep, ring the doorbell, and run away. As soon as they got within 100 yards of the place, the Bedouin knights would stop them. They must have a plan. But what? The answer turned out to be so simple I probably should have figured it out myself. The next morning we were all awakened by the same thing. It was a deep, constant booming sound. I was still asleep, and at first it had worked itself into my dreams. I dreamed that I was in a battle. Explosions were going off all around me. No matter which way I turned, another explosion would go off at my face. It was like I was trapped in a minefield. As I began to wake up, I realized that I wasn't in a minefield. I was in the hospital hut of the Malaga village. But the deep booming sound continued. What was it? I lay there for a few seconds, trying to remember where I'd heard it before. Then suddenly it hit me. I knew exactly where I had heard it before, and the realization shocked me wide awake. I sat up quickly to see that the others were already awake and looking out of the small windows of the hut. I didn't have to ask what they were looking at. I already knew. The sound I heard was the sound of the drum calling the Malaga to a transfer ceremony. I could picture the single drummer standing on the wooden platform in the clearing of the Malaga village, slowly but steadily hitting that drum. The memory wasn't exactly a pleasant one because it ended in the horrible death of a Malaga miner. I truly hoped that this transfer wouldn't end the same way. I jumped up and joined Uncle Press at one of the windows. Lauren Alder peered out of the other one. The hut wasn't far from the central clearing of the Malaga village. We were going to see all that we needed to see. The scene in the clearing was painfully familiar. The Malaga villagers slowly gathered around the central platform. The seesaw device was in place, ready to weigh the next poor victim. The lone drummer stood on the platform, beating out the summons.
and a handful of Bedouin knights stood next to the platform with spears in hand. The drummer suddenly stopped pounding his kettle, and an ominous silence fell over the village. Then, as if on cue, I heard the sound of a galloping horse. Malos was on his way. The crowd parted, and Malos charged up to the platform and dismounted before his horse had come to a stop. How could anyone be this evil? What was it that drove him to spread terror and chaos wherever he went? Was it because he enjoyed it? Did it give him some kind of thrill? Does evil exist just for evil's sake? There had to be answers to these questions, but they would have to wait for another time because the curtain was about to go up.
"Where is the glaze?" Malos bellowed. "Why was I summoned before the glaze was ready to be transferred?"
He scanned the crowd, waiting for an answer. But none was coming. Nobody could even look him in the eye. I was afraid he would blow a cork and send the knights on a rampage, but that didn't happen. Instead, Relan stepped forward. The chief miner looked calm and in control.
"Malos," he said, "I truly hope you will be happy with the news we bring you."
Malos shot a suspicious look at Relan, then stepped up to him and stuck his nose in the chief miner's face.
"Where are they, Relan?" he seethed. "I know they are here. If you hide them from me, you cannot begin to imagine the punishment that will come down upon you."
Malos was talking about us. He seemed incredibly ticked that we had gotten away and was accusing the Malago of hiding us. The four of us exchanged looks, but none of us were about to give ourselves up. Relan was cool. He didn't back down.
"That is the news I bring you," he said. "We are sorry for all the trouble the outsiders have caused you. We thought they were our friends, but they are not. And knowing that they have caused distress to Queen Kagan, well, that now makes them our enemies as well."
Was he for real? Was he going to turn us over to Malos and the knights after telling me he'd let us go? I didn't think Relan was a liar, but this sounded bad. I could tell that Malos wasn't sure where Relan was going with this either. He looked at the miner suspiciously and asked, through clenched teeth,
"Where are they?"
"I do not know," answered Relan. "But when we find them, we will bring them to you immediately."
Okay, maybe he was a liar after all, but at least he hadn't lied to me. He wasn't going to turn us in. What was he up to?
"In the meantime,"
continued Relan,
"as an apology for the trouble we have caused you and Queen Kagan and all the Bedouin, we would like to present you with a gift."
He made a motion, and the crowd parted. Three miners stepped forward carrying their load of glaze. But this was no ordinary load. They carried an entire ore car full of glaze. It was spectacular. The cart was piled high with the biggest, most brilliant glaze stones I had seen yet.
"Yesterday we struck a promising new vein of glaze," said Relan proudly. "That is our good news. There is more glaze in this new vein than we could hope to bring up in a lifetime. It took us a full day and night to load this one car, and I predict that there are hundreds of more cars to come that will be just as full."
Malos seemed impressed. He should have been. It was a lot of glaze.
"This is our gift to you," said Relan. "I ask only one thing in return."
"What is that?" barked Malos.
"I wish to be able to present this to Queen Kagan myself," said Relan. "I realize that a lowly Malago miner would never be allowed into the palace, but perhaps I could bring this car full of glaze to the Bedouin Stadium. I would be honored to present this to Queen Kagan, along with the promise of much more to come."
Relan was brilliant. He was playing Malos like a fish, and the fish was about to bite the hook. Of course, we all knew the truth. That ore car wasn't full of glaze at all. My guess is that if you dug about a quarter of the way down, the glaze would stop, and the load of tack would begin. Yes, Relan had figured out a way to smuggle his monstrous bomb right into the heart of the Bedouin palace. It was like the story of the Trojan horse, where the Greeks were at war with the Trojans and gave them a gift of a giant wooden horse, only the horse was loaded with Greek soldiers. As soon as the big horse was wheeled inside the city of Troy, the soldiers jumped out and gave a big helping of whoop-butt to the surprised Trojans. But this Trojan horse wasn't full of soldiers. This was loaded with a deadly explosive that would level the Bedouin palace and probably most of the Malago village. The plan was insane and brilliant. The question was, would Malos fall for it? Malos looked at the car full of glaze. He walked to it and dug his hand down into the precious stones. I could sense Relan tensing, but he didn't make a move. Malos pulled his hand out and clutched a load of brilliant blue stones. He then looked to Relan and said,
"Why make your promise to only Queen Kagan? I believe all of the Bedouin people should be in the stadium to receive this gift and to hear your promise."
Relan did his best not to smile and only said,
"Yes, you are a wise man."
Unbelievable! Not only was Malos going to let Relan bring the bomb in, he was going to gather all of the Bedouin around it. Malos then climbed back on his horse and bellowed,
"Bring the glaze now. I will prepare the stadium."
With that, he kicked his horse and charged toward the palace. Relan looked to the miners who had brought in the tack bomb. Without showing a hint of satisfaction, he walked to the ore car. No words were spoken. The men knew what they had to do. They all reached down, lifted the heavy car, and began the long walk to the Bedouin palace. Their death mission was underway. Uncle Press backed away from the window and said,
"Malos knows."
"No way," I said. "Why would he let them bring a bomb into the Bedouin stadium?"
"Because he wants the Malago to use it," was his answer. "He doesn't care who wins or who dies. He wants the Malago to use the tack. If that bomb goes off, he'll have succeeded."
Maybe Uncle Press was right. If Malos wanted to start a war that would throw Denderon into chaos, what better way to kick it off than by letting the Malago have their big bang right in the Bedouin backyard? For Malos, it was perfect. We all knew exactly where this was leading, but there was nothing we could do to stop it because we were trapped in this stupid hut. But not for long. Without stopping to tell us, Lore ran for the window and in one quick acrobatic move pulled herself up and out. In seconds, she was climbing up onto the roof. It happened so fast that none of us could react. We just sort of stared at each other, wondering what she was doing. We heard her quietly scamper across the roof until she was above the door to the hut. What followed was the sound of a brief scuffle outside, followed by a few quick grunts. Lore then poked her head back inside the door. "We may leave now," she said, with matter-of-fact calm. None of us were exactly sure of what had happened, but we all ran for the door and followed Lore out. Outside, we saw all three guards had been knocked unconscious and were leaning against the hut. Lore had struck before they knew what hit them and had managed to free us all in less than 20 seconds. That was pretty cool. But there wasn't time for praise. We had to get out of the Malago village without being caught. As it turned out, it wasn't hard. Relan's plan was being carried out, which meant the rest of the miners were preparing for their attack. As soon as they heard the explosion, they would charge the Bedouin palace. Those miners had more important things to worry about than guarding us, so getting out of the village and disappearing into the woods was easy. The four of us ran until we felt we were a safe distance away. Uncle Press then raised his hand, and we all stopped to catch our breath. Uncle Press looked at Lore and said what was on all of our minds.
"You are unbelievable,"
he said with a laugh.
"Why didn't you tell us you were going to do that? We could have helped."
Lore gave a very Lore-esque response.
"I did not need your help. The best weapon in battle is surprise. The miners were watching Malos and Relan. They were not thinking about us. If I had waited, They may have turned their attention back to guarding us. I did not want to give them that chance.
I'm proud of you, Lore,
said Uncle Press.
Your mother would be, too.
She taught me well, said Lore. Huh, my mother never taught me anything like that. She spent a lot of time drilling good table manners into me, but we never got to the lesson on how to disarm and crack heads with three guys twice my size. And my education was definitely lacking in that area.
What about the bomb?
Said Alder.
We must do something.
Uncle Press spun back to us and said,
Okay, first thing we have to do is get to the palace. We aren't doing any good here.
I wasn't so sure that going to the palace was on the top of my to-do list. The palace was the target, and unless we had a real chance of stopping Relan from setting off that bomb, the only thing getting closer would do is guarantee that we'd be killed the instant it went off. But I wasn't about to say that. The truth was, if there was any hope of stopping Relan, we had to get there.
Alder, I want you to go back to the village, said Uncle Press.
No,
he exclaimed.
I want to stay with you.
Look, said Uncle Press firmly. I have no idea if we're going to stop this thing. So get back to the village, talk to anyone who'll listen. Warn them that this bomb is going to be bigger than they could ever imagine. Try to get them to go down into the mines. Maybe if they get underground, they'll be safe.
But I...
No buts, Alder, said Uncle Press. I know you want to be with us, but if we fail, you still might be able to save some of the Milago.
Uncle Press was right. If Alder could save even one person from being killed by the explosion, then his mission would be successful. He had to go back. Alder nodded to Uncle Press, which told me he understood how important his job was. There wasn't time for long goodbyes. I hadn't known Alder for very long, but I had grown fond of him. He was kind of a goof, but I didn't doubt for a second that he would have put his life on the line for any one of us. I'd like to say that I would do the same for him.
Good luck, travelers,
he said, and smiled at each of us.
You too, Alder,
said Uncle Press.
Hurry.
Alder then spun around and ran back toward the Milago village. Now it was just the three of us, the warrior, the boss, and the kid who was so scared he had to pee. Guess which one I was.
Come on,
commanded Uncle Press, and ran deeper into the forest. Our immediate goal was to get back to the Bedouin palace. Beyond that, there was no plan. We would have to wing it once we got there, assuming we even got there. Since we were bushwhacking, it took us a long time. I could tell that Lore was getting impatient, but it was better to take a little longer to get there than to risk being captured again. We took a wide route and circled around toward the sea, then crawled along the bluffs until we were within eyesight of the outcropping that held the Bedouin palace. Though we couldn't see it, we knew where it was, because there was a long line of knights marching toward it. Behind them were the four miners carrying the ore car full of glaze and tack. They were almost at the palace. In a few minutes, they would descend into the stadium. We continued to move quickly along the bluffs, moving closer to the stadium. It was a smart thing to do because none of the knights expected anyone to be coming from the sea. They were ever vigilant, but always with their eyes toward the forest. We were able to quietly slip in from behind them and crawl the last several yards on our bellies until we reached the lip of the stadium. We had made it! Now the question was, what were we going to do? The three of us peered down into the stadium to see that the line of knights was marching down the steep stairs toward the grass field below. Behind them came Relan and the miners, struggling with the heavy ore car. I glanced around the rest of the stadium and saw that two of the spectator sections were beginning to fill up. The Bedouin people and the Novans were once again taking their seats in anticipation of a show. It was a horrible feeling. None of these people had any idea that the main event was going to be their own deaths. I looked to the section where the Milago were before to see that it was empty. Big surprise. These guys knew what was coming and didn't want to be any part of it. I then looked to Lore and to Uncle Press. Nobody said anything. That could mean only one thing. Nobody knew what to do. The thought ran through my head that we could run down the stairs, screaming at everyone to run for their lives, but all Relan would have to do is stop, press the button on his homemade bomb, and it would be all over. That wouldn't work at all. But if we were going to come up with a better plan, we needed to do it fast, because Relan and the miners had reached the grass field and were about to place the ore car dead center in the ring. "If I had an arrow, I could kill Relan from here," said Lor.
"Then one of the others would press the button," said Uncle Press.
I then heard the three chimes that signaled the arrival of Queen Kagan. Sure enough, when I looked at the royal box, a few knights marched in, followed by the chubby queen. True to form, she was munching on something that looked like a roast beef. What a piece of work.
"Malos isn't here," said Uncle Press. "My guess is he's on a horse riding as fast as he can to get as far away from here as possible."
Indeed, Malos was nowhere to be seen. That was further proof that everything was happening according to his plan. And that's when it hit me. "I've got an idea," I said, without even thinking. Even as I said it, I was still working it through my head, calculating the possibilities and the chances of it working. Uncle Press and Lore looked at me, but I didn't respond to them at first. I still had to work things out.
"Don't take your time, Bobby," said Uncle Press. "We don't have much."
"Okay, okay," I said nervously. "There might be a way, but if it doesn't work, we're all dead."
"We are all dead anyway," said Lore.
Good point. I looked down to the stadium and realized that I was about to volunteer to do something crazy. If I did it, I'd probably die. If I didn't do it, we'd definitely die. Probably was better than definitely. "I think I know how to stop this party," I said with as much confidence as I could muster, which wasn't much. Before I said another word, two more chimes sounded, and the crowd fell silent. Relan and the miners stood next to their wicked gift. Queen Kagan dropped her roast and leaned over the railing to look down on them.
"Tell me what it is you've brought me,"
she shouted greedily. If we were going to do something, now was the time.
Journal Number 4 Continued. Denderon.
"Good day, Queen Kagan,"
shouted Relan from the center of the stadium field. This was probably the first time a Malago miner had addressed a Bedouin monarch. Ever. It was probably going to be the last. Relan had everyone's attention in the stadium. I hoped that he had a lot to say, because if he decided to keep it short and reach for the bomb button, my plan had no chance of working. But if he took this opportunity to say what was on his mind and make some kind of grand political statement for the history books, then maybe we'd have a chance. For my plan to work, we each had a different task. Unfortunately, my job was probably the most dangerous. It's not that I wanted the most dangerous task, but it was the only job I was capable of pulling off. Lucky me. I quickly told my idea to Uncle Press and Lore. They didn't even stop to discuss it. The time for debate was over, and since nobody had any better ideas, my plan was a go. The plan called for the three of us to split up. Before we had the chance to share a good luck or a goodbye, Lore was off and running. Typical. Uncle Press didn't run off as quickly. He stayed long enough to give me this look of uncle-like concern. I felt like I needed to say something important, but the only thing that came to mind was, "I really wish you would let me go to that basketball game." Okay, maybe not the most eloquent last words, but it was how I felt. Uncle Press smiled and said,
"No, you don't."
Then he took off running. I hesitated a moment because, well, I was scared. But I also had to think about what Uncle Press just said. Sure, if I had gone to that basketball game, I wouldn't be lying here facing certain death. But that's not where my head went. This is going to be hard to explain because I'm not really sure I understand it myself, but as dire as the situation was, it somehow felt right.
Believe me, it's not like I was having fun or anything, far from it, but when I took a few seconds to do a gut check, I got the strange feeling that this was the right place. No, the only place for me to be. What was that traveler motto? This is the way it was meant to be? Okay, stupid motto, but it really felt to me as if this is the way it was meant to be. I don't mean to make this sound any more dramatic than it was, but the word that came to my mind right then was destiny. Maybe this was my destiny. Now I could only hope that I'd get the chance to play a basketball game again sometime. But that wouldn't happen if I didn't get moving. So I jumped up and ran to do my part of the plan. As I ran along the top of the stadium, I wasn't worried about getting caught, because all eyes were focused on Relan. It must have been amazing for the Bedouin people to see this Milago Minor addressing their queen. It was a spectacle that never would have happened if Malos hadn't orchestrated it. I guess that's the kind of thing Uncle Press was talking about when he said that Malos never did any of his own dirty work. He said how Malos would influence others to do it for him. Well, Relan was definitely about to do some dirty work, courtesy of Malos.
People of Denderon,
Relan continued,
I come before you today with a gift that is more valuable than you can imagine.
It seemed as if Relan was indeed about to give a speech. That was good. Hopefully he was long-winded, because I had no idea how much time it would take to pull off my plan.
My gift is more valuable than the glaze you see before you,
he bellowed.
It is more valuable than all the glaze that has ever been taken from the mines. It is the gift of a wonderful future, and it is for all the good people of Denderon to share.
Was this guy dramatic or what? Well, why not? He wasn't planning on being around long enough to hear any bad reviews. This was his moment in the spotlight. Keep going, Relan, I thought. Make it good and long. As I ran, I saw that Lore and Uncle Press had already managed to pull off the first part of their jobs. They had each snuck up on a Bedouin knight from behind, whacked them, and taken their armor. They needed to wear the armor so they could make their way down to the stadium field without being noticed. That's why I gave them the jobs I did. There was no way I was going to knock out a knight and steal his armor. And even if by some miracle I was able to do that, I was too small. If I put on the armor, I'd look like a little kid wearing his daddy's clothes. No, I had another job, and I knew exactly where I had to go. It was only yesterday that I had been there. At the time, I swore never to go near the place again. But here I was, headed right back. It only took me a few minutes to get there. I was pretty fast, so running 300 yards was nothing. But as I approached my destination, I had a moment's hesitation. I thought that maybe if I ran fast enough and far enough, I could survive the blast from the tac bomb. But that thought lasted only about a nanosecond. There was no way I was going to bail on the plan. At this point, it wasn't even the bomb I was afraid of. That's because I had arrived at my destination. The horrible hole that looked down into the dark depths of the Quig Pens. Yep. If my plan was going to work, I was going to have to climb down there and make my way to the stadium through a minefield of hungry quigs. And I didn't have my trusty whistle to protect me either. This could hurt. I stood on the edge of the hole, trying to get the nerve to climb down. The rope ladder was in a heap at the bottom of the hole, right where it had fallen yesterday. But the thick rope that Lore had climbed to make her escape was still hanging there. That was my ticket down. I had to stop worrying and kick myself into gear because Relan could hit that button at any second, so I grabbed the rope, swung my legs over, and slid down the rope into the pit of hell. When I got to the bottom, the first thing that hit me was the smell. It was as nasty as I had remembered it. Then I realized I had landed in a puddle of some kind of thick brown goo. I realized what it was, and I nearly barfed. It was a congealed pool of blood from the quig that Uncle Press had skewered. I fought back the rising puke and quickly looked around. The injured quig wasn't there.
Maybe it was dead.
Better still, maybe it had been eaten by the other Quigs. Can you believe this was the way my mind was working now? My next goal was to get to the door that led to the stadium as fast as possible. I couldn't sneak quietly through the Quig pen. No, I had to beat feet and get there fast. So I took off running in the direction I remembered traveling the day before. The run through the Quig pen was terrifying. As I rounded each turn in the labyrinth, I kept expecting to see a monster Quig waiting there with its mouth open, ready for dinner. My adrenaline was pumping so hard I don't think I could have walked slowly and cautiously if I'd wanted to. I should have been exhausted by now, but I wasn't. Fear will do that. If a Quig didn't get me, then the bomb would. I wasn't sure which would be more painful. My guess is that the bomb would be quicker. But I forced those morbid thoughts away because the goal was to stay alive, not choose the least painful way to die. After a few more turns, I saw the door to the stadium. I had made it. Believe me, I never thought I'd get this far. I ran to the huge door and put my ear to it. I could hear Relan still giving his speech. That was good. But there was another sound I wanted to hear as well. The job I had given to Lore was to get down to the stadium floor and unlock the door. That wouldn't be easy because as soon as she started to lift the heavy latch, somebody would certainly see her and try to stop her. Timing was everything. If she opened the door too soon, my plan would fail. If she opened it too late, my plan would fail. There was a small window of opportunity, and it was getting close. I listened again. And that's when I heard it. Two quick raps on the door. That was the signal. Lore had made it and was standing outside. Excellent. Now she had to wait for my signal before opening the door. Of course, she had no way of knowing if I was on the other side or not. For all she knew, I was being munched on by a Quig who had a surprise treat fall into its lap. Still, I knew it didn't matter. She would stand there until I signaled for her to open the door or the bomb blew up, whichever came first. Now came the hardest part of all. Talk about gut-check time. Everything that I had done up to this point was easy compared to what I had to do next. I looked around for something to help me, and found a metal shield that one of the Bedouin knights had dropped yesterday before he became Quig food. I needed something else, too. I hoped to find one of the knight's spears, but for some reason they were gone. Time was running out. I had to move faster. I looked around again and saw the perfect thing. It turned my stomach to use it, but I couldn't let my squeamish belly stop me from doing what I had to do. So I picked it up. It was a leg bone. A human leg bone. As disgusting as it was exactly what I needed. At least this one didn't still have the foot attached. I fought back my disgust, took a few steps back into the cavern, and rang the dinner bell. Yes, I was using myself as bait. I used the leg bone to bang on the metal shield and hopefully wake up any napping Quig that had missed my crazed run a few seconds before. "Come on!" I shouted. "Come and get it! Tasty meat! Right this way!" This was insane. Think about it. I was putting myself out there to be eaten by a beast that had already devoured three people. My hands were shaking with fear. Whose idea was this anyway? Oh, right. Mine. I banged on the shield a few more times, and the annoying sound echoed throughout the cavern. Another horrible thought went through my head. What if they could hear this from the stadium? If there was even a hint of a problem, Relan would hit the button and the game would be over. "Let's go!" I shouted. "Come on, you losers! I'm the guy who killed your buddy up on the mountain! Come and get me!" It came without so much as a warning. Yesterday, when the Quig attacked Uncle Press, it stalked him cautiously and slowly until it was close enough to pounce. That's not what was happening now. From far back in the depths of the rocky labyrinth, I heard the bellow of a Quig that was already charging. Maybe it was because of the annoying sound of the shield. Maybe it was my yelling. Maybe it was ravenously hungry. I'll never know, but whatever I had done, it worked. A Quig was now charging toward me at a dead run.
I could hear its giant paws pounding on the rocky surface as it rumbled closer, ready for the kill. Now was the time. Now was the window of opportunity. Lore had to open that door fast, or I'd be lunch. I dropped the shield, ran to the door, and gave the secret prearranged signal for Lore to do her thing.